Hey everybody, Jason here. Martin and I haven't posted for about a month at this point. That's not going to be normal. We just hit a very busy season for both of us. We're both in our Masters of Divinity courses, which, if you're not familiar with higher education on theological subjects, is basically the biggest master's or graduate level degree that you can attain. So it's a lot of work in addition to being full-time husbands, full-time pastors, and in Martin's case, a full-time dad. So we just didn't have time for the podcast over the last couple of weeks. This is not going to be normal for us to take breaks like this, but from time to time, it might be necessary. When we are posting, we just want to make sure that everything that we're posting is super helpful for you guys. You're going to learn something that is going to grow you closer to Jesus. If we're not in shape to do that, then... we're just not going to post. We're not going to put up something that's not going to be helpful to you to the best of our ability. So this week, we're going to be talking about how to carry those Easter vibes from a month ago all throughout the year. We recorded this episode a couple weeks back, so it might sound a little anachronistic. If you can look past that, I think the content is really, really good. So thank you guys for being here, and I hope that this is helpful.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Pocket Theology. I am Martin, here from Ames, Iowa, with my good buddy Jason out in Murfreesboro, Illinois. Greet the people, Jason.
Hey, everyone. How are you today?
That was so cringe.
I know it was.
I hated that. That one made my spine. I'm glad.
That was all for your benefit. Everything that I do thinking about you, Martin.
Anyways. This week, Jason and I are going to be talking about Easter a little bit. You might have noticed that we didn't really do an episode for Easter this year. We took a break and said we were going to spend time with our families. We were going to do our church responsibilities, and we were going to do something this week for it. So this week, we're going to be talking about Easter and how to keep your Easter vibes going all year round. We want to first start off, and I want to kind of explain what we're talking about. So my church in Ames usually runs about 100 people on any given Sunday. Easter, like most people would expect, has a little bit more. We had 137 people this week, which is like 30 more people than normal. And that's awesome. We had a good chunk of visitors. We probably had 4 or 5 visiting families, which was awesome to see. But I'm also a realistic person. So I recognize that some of those families were probably there because it was Easter and they weren't coming back. So this week, what Jason and I are going to talk about is how to keep that Easter enthusiasm for Jesus going. We sometimes treat Easter kind of like it's church camp when you're in high school. When you go to church camp in high school, you go for 5-6 days, and the entire
you have a girlfriend for 3 of those days, and then you break up by the end of the week.
Exactly. I didn't do that, but you know,
I did.
Of course you did. Of course you did. So you're at camp for about 5-6 days, and the goal of church camp is that you would be completely removed from worldly temptations, and you would be in an environment full of Christians who are desiring to help you grow in your relationship with Jesus. And everybody does for about a week. And the problem is, when you go home, there are not structures and there are not people that you can rely on still. So we're going to talk a little bit about things that you can do to help out with keeping that enthusiasm going when you get done with Easter. Because Easter is a fun day. There's always cool things. And most of the time you leave church and you go, man, that was pretty good. That was pretty solid. I'm okay with that. You're not going to do anything through the rest of the week to help keep that desire going. So we're going to talk about a couple of those things. These things are called spiritual disciplines, by the way. They are things that you can do so that you can grow closer to Jesus outside of being at church on Sunday. So I have one that I want to talk about that is not the standard read your Bible and pray. Those are the two that get focused on almost all the time. But there are other things that you can do. And one of the things that I like to do to spend some time just with Jesus, spend some time reflecting on who he is and what he did. I like to be out in nature. So when I lived in Missouri, I had a little archery range I would go to at a park, and I would spend time at the archery range. I would take time between when I was shooting arrows, and I would pray. I would reflect on, you know, how great it is that God had created these things that were around me, how beautiful they were, how in Romans, I think Paul actually says that there is enough proof in creation that you can find God. And so I like to spend time in nature looking for it, looking for God in what's out there. And so that's the practice that I kind of wanted to share with you guys this week, is you're spending some time, maybe you're driving from home to work or work to home. Maybe you're out at a park with kids, or you're just hanging out, right? Spend some time outside with what God has created and look for him in those things. So Jason had something that he wanted to share as well. So I'm going to let him do his thing.
Before we kind of move on to the next spiritual, the next category, I guess, that we're going to talk about of spiritual discipline related things. If you're going to spend time in nature, because that's something that I used to do more than I do now, honestly, but it's because the area of the country that I was living in, it was a little more conducive to that kind of thing. Make sure you turn off the noise. Like, if you're like, I'm going to go out in nature and encounter God, then like, don't bring your headphones, or at least like turn your headphones off for a few minutes, you know? Like, yes, God can be louder than the things that distract you, than your music or your podcast or whatever. But often for some reason, he chooses not to be, and he speaks very quietly. So if you're like, I'm going to go out in nature and encounter God, like, turn off the electronics, or at least like silence your phone, and like just settle down and just be in nature. Listen to the birds and to the wind and to the rustling of the leaves that God created. You're not going to learn some deep theological truth there, but it's a very prayerful and worshipful experience if your heart's in the right place. So I would add that, because I think that is a very, very helpful thing. And I don't want someone to be like, well, I don't encounter God in nature. And it's like, yeah, you don't encounter God because you're blaring a sports podcast the whole freaking time you're outside. Like, that's not God's fault. That's your fault. You need to quiet down and settle down, you know? Yeah. Anyway, I wanted to turn towards the classic church attendance. And I know everyone's like, I'm going to turn this podcast off now because the pastor's telling me I should go to church. But just bear with me for a second. Martin mentioned that their church attendance increased by like 30, 40 people on Easter. Ours did too. Ours increased by, about mid-30s. We normally average about mid-60s at my church. A good Sunday for us is somewhere in the 80s. This past Sunday, for the first time since I was working here, and I was talking to one of my elders, it might be the first time in the last 6 or 7 years, we had over 100 people at church, which is awesome. That's amazing. We're in a tiny little like dying coal town, coal and farming town. Like, that's great. That's super exciting. We're very, very happy about it. But the reality is, next week, 30 of those people probably aren't going to be there. We go on Easter, maybe on Christmas, if the weather's good, to church. And then so many of us say, I've got enough church for the year. I don't need anything else. I'm just going to stay home. And we kind of have this idea in our heads. It's like, I'm saved, so I don't need church. Right? Like, I mean, Jesus gave me my eternal fire insurance. So I don't have to keep going to church. Like, I got everything valuable they're going to give me.
I like eternal fire insurance, but I like to call it my get out of hell free card.
Yeah, whatever you want to call it. We have this idea that like that's what church exists for, to give us our get out of hell free card. And then, well, there's no reason to go back. They've given us everything valuable they're going to give us. I want to read really quick a little passage out of Hebrews 10, 19 through 25-ish, and then just sit on it for a second. Because while we think, I go to church, I get saved, and then I don't have to go back to church, or at least I don't have to go very often, I can go like twice a year. That's not the way the author of Hebrews thought that's not the way the people he was writing to were supposed to think. That's not the way we should think today. So the author of Hebrews, might be Paul, might be someone else, says, therefore, brothers and sisters, since we have confidence to enter the most holy place by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way opened to us through the curtain, that is his body, since we have a great priest over the house of God. So all that, he's saying, we have this intimate connection with God because of Jesus' sacrifice. Let us draw near to God with a sincere heart and with the full assurance that faith brings, having our hearts sprinkled to cleanse us from a guilty conscience and having our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope that we profess, for he who promised is faithful. So this is an encouragement to remain in the faith. Don't walk away. You know, Jesus got you. Now, we're all good with this so far. What does this have to do with church? Hold on a sec. Let us consider how we may spur one another onwards towards love and good deeds. So that's the first thing. Let us consider how we can spur one another on. Well, you can't spur on other Christians if you aren't around them. Then he makes it even clearer. Not giving up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. In the next section, he starts talking about, our next paragraph in this translation, he starts talking about sins, about how if you continue deliberately sinning, then there's no sacrifice remaining for your sins, that you're making a mockery of what Jesus has done. So there's this connection in the author of Hebrews' minds and in an inspired text that says, you're saved, therefore you should go to church, which is the exact opposite of what we think. So many people in the U.S., especially throughout the Christian West, say, I'm saved, so I don't need church because church has given me the only valuable thing it can give me. The author of the book of Hebrews says, you're saved, therefore you need church, so other people can spur you on towards love and good deeds, so that you can encourage one another as you wait for Jesus to return, and then immediately connects it in the next section, which I didn't read, to the issue of sin, seeming to imply, at least to me, that if you are not in regular community with other believers, that you are certain to fall into sin. And if you fall into deliberate sin, you're making a mockery of what Jesus has done. So this is a deadly serious thing. And I think so many of us don't get it, that it's not just about coming into a church on Sunday, sitting in a pew, listening to a preacher, but it's a matter of saying, I'm saved. I need to be in community with others. And that goes far beyond just a Sunday. Yes, you need to show up on Sundays. You need to be encouraged and you need to be taught. But you also need to show up on a Wednesday or a Thursday or whatever and be in community with other believers. You need to serve on a Saturday morning because that's what Jesus expects of you. You are saved. That's step one. And the rest of the Christian life comes afterwards in community with other believers. Salvation is not the end goal. It's the beginning. So, Martin, I want to ask you a question related to this. Why do you go to church? Why do you think other people should go to church? Don't say because you're employed by the church, because I can feel that sarcastic answer. Like if you weren't a pastor, I assume you would still have involvement in your local church community. Why? And why do you think other people should?
So part of the reason that I go to church is because I have relationships. There are some places that you just expect to see people, right? You work with people, so you expect to see your coworkers there. You have a party that you're going to with mutual friends, so you expect to see them there. I have relationships with people in my church. And on Sunday, I expect to see them, and they expect to see me. So many of the people that I've built relationships with, they've told me that they were on the verge of looking somewhere else because they didn't have those relationships here. They found their reason to be here in the people who were here. And that's the biggest reason that I stay attending, that I am where I am, because there are people that I genuinely care about, that I want to see, that I love seeing. It's literally the best part of my Sunday to see certain people. And so I come because I know they're going to be here. If I texted them and said, hey, you want to like dip out on church and go get brunch or something, I don't think they would go for it. Because now they have other people that they've been connected with. They have more people that they've built this kind of relationship with. And I think that the only way that you could genuinely get all of them to dip out is for all of them to get on the same page and dip out. Like, people are the reason that you should be in your church. People that you care about. The old adage, the church isn't a building, it's a people, right? You can still meet somewhere else. You can still do something somewhere else. We do our small groups on Thursday nights. We went to the park this week, and we just spent time. We all of our group has kids that went and played on the playground. And we just spent time together. We broke bread together, which is the like really cringy Christian way of saying we ate food together. And we spent time talking about, you know, what's going on in our week. Where did we see Jesus? What were we doing? Right? And that's, I mean, Sundays aren't the only time you can do it. And so I'm a big proponent that if you can't make it on Sunday, if you're a sports parent, right? And I have some of these. I have kids in my youth group who are 100% the kid who has sports stuff every Sunday morning. But you know what? They show up for youth group Sunday night. They're still coming to a group. They're still learning more. They're still building relationships with the people that they care about in the context that they care about. Parents can do the same thing. It's just not usually called youth group. It's usually a small group. And so if you can't make it for Sundays, find a small group you can meet with. If, you know, if Sunday's just a day that doesn't work, find another one. That's my thing.
So the description you gave there at the beginning was, well, there are people there and I have a relationship with those people and I like seeing those people, so I can't just like leave them. And then as you were talking about, like, you know, when we have like a small group together, when we go meet somewhere in town that is not a church building. And by the way, yes, there's absolutely nothing special about your church building. It's just convenient. Like, that's why churches have them, because they are structurally convenient. That's about it. Anyway, you're talking about meeting somewhere else. And you said, so you're sitting together, you're eating food together, you're hanging out, you're talking, you're laughing, whatever. And it gives you an opportunity to talk about where you've seen Jesus in your life that week. Sometimes certain small groups will get together and they'll study a book by a Christian author. Sometimes they'll get together and they'll study a book of the Bible. Sometimes they get together just for prayer and fellowship, whatever. In your case, you were talking about, well, we get to talk about places in our life where we're seeing Jesus that week. So the question I was going to ask, but I think you kind of answered. But I'll go ahead and ask it anyways. I'll let you answer it in your own words. What's the difference between church and just like a club, right? Like, why, if church is about people, then why shouldn't I just go join like a cross stitch club or something and then just ignore church? Like, why church instead of all the other stuff that I can meet people at?
So first of all, that paper that I wrote last semester or last block for over Exodus, that's what I'm writing my one this semester or this block on, is who the church is and what they do, why it's different than, you know, a Jesus club, right? And there's a couple of things that we've come to, or that I've come to the conclusion of. The first one is the church is called by God to live differently. So when you join a cross stitch club, cool. What do you do outside of that club? How does it change what you do? Maybe you cross stitch outside of the club. I don't know.
You waste a bunch of money on cross stitching supplies.
Oh, my mom cross stitches like it's nobody's business. She wastes so much money on it. She's never going to listen to this, but Mom, I love you. You join a club and it gives you something to do for a little bit. My father-in-law is not a Christian, but he has found community in his local gun club, in his local archery club, in a group of whitewater kayakers throughout the state of Iowa. I mean, he has people that he can count on. He has people that care about him and that he cares about. It's just not in a church. And here's the difference. The difference is those people, when they get together, they're getting together because, like, they have a shared hobby or, like, they're going to do something together. When the church gets together, it's for the purpose of, I'm going to use big words and then define them, edification, which means to build each other up, to help encourage each other, and for correction. If somebody is blatantly living a life in the wrong way, in a way that doesn't honor Jesus, then we have to call each other out. Matthew 18, Jesus talks about how to do that. And so the church's goal is to help keep each other on the right path. The gun club doesn't care if you stop shooting or not, unless, you know, it's because you don't give them their money every year. The archery club doesn't care if you sell all your bows and arrows. What's it going to change for them? The difference is that the church is built to be a group that comes together to encourage each other. Daryl probably doesn't listen to this anymore, but Daryl, one of my friends from college, Jason's friend from college, really, both of our friend, Daryl. Daryl was telling me one time that when he studied the word ecclesia, which is translated to church in the New Testament, it is not exclusively used for a church, but when it's used outside of that group, it's for like a strategic battle plan or like a planning a mission. And so the goal is that when we come together, we would spend time reflecting on how to change the world around us when we leave. And that's the way I like to think of church. We come together to encourage each other to keep going, to correct each other when we're going the wrong way, and to make a plan so that in the next 6 days and 22 hours, we can affect the world in the greatest way that we can.
To summarize, we used some big words, and I'll try to talk around the big words. You come together to correct one another when someone's doing something wrong, to provide community, which, yeah, you can get community other places. The other things you can't, but to provide community. Community amongst people who believe the same things, who follow the same God. To build up and encourage one another. I would add to instruct one another. Sometimes you're not doing anything wrong, but you just don't know what you don't know. And you just need instruction. And that's kind of what people like Martin and I do. And last of all, I would also add to serve one another. First and foremost, there is a priority that Christians should serve other Christians in the New Testament, but also to serve those outside of our community. Christians have been renowned for that since the inception of the church, service to others. And only recently have we started to lose that reputation. That's a very sad thing and should not have happened. So build one another up, encourage one another, correct one another, instruct one another, serve one another. That's what the church is for. And there's no other social institution on the face of the earth that does that as well, as thoroughly, and as connected to the one true God as the church does. Martin, we've been going here for a while. We were going to bring up resurrection. And my very short version of this rant is just, especially in evangelical churches, we love talking about the cross, and the cross is really important. Jesus died for your sins. But we mention the cross so much, we put the cross all over our buildings, and we don't spend a lot of time talking about the resurrection. And here's the reality. Without the resurrection, the cross was meaningless. Without the resurrection, our faith isn't true. Without the resurrection, there is no point for you to be listening to this podcast or going to church or reading the Bible or trying to pray. The resurrection is the core of our faith. And Paul makes it very, very clear in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, that the resurrection is the only and the core reason for all of our hope. Now, when I mentioned that I wanted to talk about that a little bit, and that's all that I'll say about it, you said something that I really, really liked before we hit record. Can you kind of repeat what you said about the redemption of the world?
Yeah. So one of the things that it's kind of like a pet peeve of mine, okay? When we look at the sacrifice of Jesus and we say, oh yes, it's for my personal salvation. I believe Jesus and now I am saved. It's a really like watered down way to describe what's happened. So Jesus's resurrection is not for a specific person. It is not for a specific group. It is a universal atonement. So what that means is that everybody has the opportunity to accept this. There is not certain people who just get overlooked. There's not certain people who they have no chance, right? Everybody has this option. And we can read it in John 3:16, where it says, "For God so loved the world, the entirety of creation." Because the world is not usually just narrowed down to the people of creation either. "For God so loved the entirety of the world that he gave his only son, that whoever would believe in him shall not perish but have eternal life." It means that this opportunity exists for everybody, for everything. When we get to the final goal, right? I also want to point out, resurrection isn't the reason to follow Jesus. If you're following Jesus because you want to, you know, go to heaven, that's not the right motive. We follow Jesus because we love him. But if you get to resurrection, you get to the final time when you are with God in eternity, it's going to look, in my understanding, fairly similar to it where it does now. Because all of creation is being redeemed, right? The old question, will dogs be in heaven? I hope so, because that would mean that they are also redeemed. And I love dogs. But that's my little rant. When we understand Jesus's atonement as specifically for me, or specifically for Jason, or specifically for these group of people, then we don't understand it right. Because if God loved the entirety of the world, why would he offer that to just certain people? So that's the end of my rant.
Yeah. Remember, when we're talking about eternity, that it is a restoration of the garden. And when we think about the Garden of Eden, ignoring the whole debate about like the first three chapters of Genesis, are they literal? Are they just the picture that we get there? When we think about the picture of the garden, there's not just humans there. There's plants and there's animals. The sentence, you know, you can eat from all the trees of the garden, but not this one. That doesn't make any sense if there's not trees there. When Jesus dies, he doesn't just die to reconcile humans so he can live in the middle of a barren desert with them. He dies for all the things that he created. And humans have a special place. But that doesn't mean plants and animals and whatever don't have a place. In new creation, there will be all of that. Jesus died to reconcile everything to him. I could keep going. It's one of my favorite things, but I won't. I'll stop there. Martin did a good enough job talking about it. Guys, thank you so much for joining us here today. We really love talking about this sort of stuff. We hope that it's helpful to some of you. We have some episodes that across both platforms it's on have gotten up over 100 listens. So that's pretty freaking sick. So someone out there finds this helpful. So we really, really appreciate you guys. And if this is helpful, please share it with friends and family. Give us a review. Send us your questions to realpockettheology@gmail.com. And we can do an episode about stuff you're curious about. Or text us if you have our numbers, whatever. But at any rate, we will talk to you guys again next week. Thanks for being here.